Today, I am interviewing Alfredo Ramirez from Viapta. Love what we talked about. We got deep into AI use cases and how to leverage those internally as a startup, what you could do and how to execute immediately. And he's talking about some big impact they had from doing it. So you're not going to want to miss this episode. Look forward to seeing you and check it out. How do you grow like a VC-backed company without taking on investors? Do you want to create a lifestyle business, a performance business, or an empire? How do you scale to an exit without losing your freedom? Those are the questions, and this show is the answer. Welcome, everybody, to the Scale Up Show. This is your host, Ryan Staley, and I have a very special guest with me today. I have Alfredo Ramirez. Alfredo is the CEO of Viapta, which is a global leader in collaboration intelligence. He's helped over 40 million. That's a lot. It's a lot of collaboration. Collaborate better through automation, monitoring, and actionable insights. Has done a lot too, you know, in terms of like the Forbes Technology Council, is also, you know, basically a board member for the Texas Innovation Center over at U of T Austin. So Alfredo, welcome. Happy to have you on the show, man.
Hello, and it's a great pleasure to join you.
Yeah. And I'm excited, man. I know we were talking a little bit about some of the AI things that you're doing within your business, you know, before we even hit the record button. But before we get too deep into that, I want to give do a real quick revenue rundown around you and your organization, kind of where you're at in the stage of the journey. So where are you guys at in the revenue journey?
So we're in a growth stage company. We're the growth stage. And we're just under 20 million annual recurring revenue, and we actually originally started the business back in 2007. So maybe just give you a little background as well.
Yeah, I would love that.
Some context, because yes, we are a B2B SaaS company that really enables organizations to make hybrid work effective. We've started with the focus around collaborative work initially, as organizations are trying to get their people back to the office or at least implement hybrid work. You know, around collaboration specifically, there are over 100 million meetings a day, and over a billion information workers are joining these meetings using a variety of devices, smartphones, laptops, meeting room systems, and possibly AR, VR headsets as examples. And then as a result, one in five meetings have some kind of user experience issue caused by technology, space environmentals, or user behavior engagement. And so this is really expensive when you take into account the cost of people, meeting space, and technology, and the opportunity cost when the user experience negatively affects sales, customer services, telehealth, and the other critical business use cases. And so this is where Viapta comes in. Viapta makes this hybrid work effective from anywhere, and when using a variety of collaboration applications. And yes, we've started with virtual collaborative work. Today and tomorrow, we can expand to enabling individual creator work to be much more effective as well. Now, we originally started back in 2007 pursuing a different mission. We were integrating synchronous video communication into a number of workflows. And over time, around 2015 or just before that, we started getting a lot more demand around video communication performance management. And so in 2015, we started our pivot to that space. And the solution that we've, or the cloud platform we have today, is really the basis behind that pivot almost 9 years ago.
Wow. That's, I mean, it makes sense, right? And that's much earlier than I imagine a lot of other people in your space in terms of that remote work, collaborative environment. I remember, like, we used to have, this was like kind of before Zoom came out, we used to use video. Remember video?
Oh, yeah, V-I-D-Y-O. Yeah. I remember
and,
that.
There was another one, but it was a brutal, brutal experience that we had when it came out. People would always freeze. Like, I mean, it was just, it was maddening. But anyways, I digress. So did you bootstrap the company, or did you have investors, or what was your path there?
So originally it was bootstrapped, because when we started, all of a sudden the financial crisis started back in 2007, 2008. So we self-funded the business till 2016, when we could show, like, off of the one product that we pivoted to developing and going to market with, as we were showing product market fit. And so our first Series A was 2016. Our Series B was in 2019. And, you know, we primarily focused on pursuing the Cisco Unified Communications install base, which Cisco, prior to the COVID pandemic, was the leader in that space. Now, you're probably aware these days, most organizations have migrated over to Microsoft, or large enterprises have migrated to Microsoft around Teams and or Zoom. Cisco hasn't disappeared. So, you know, they still have a solid product and install base, but nowhere near the size of Microsoft's today.
Yeah. And what's your go-to-market like for growing the business? And then how large is your team?
So we're just under 50 people, and our go-to-market, our ideal customer profile is large enterprises. In fact, we've got close to a couple hundred large enterprise customers today, of the likes of Visa, NVIDIA, to large government agencies like the U.S. Veterans Affairs, the U.S. Army, and large enterprises, even in other markets in Europe, that include AstraZeneca, BASF, and so forth. So,
love that, man. So enterprise motion, it sounds like, are you predominantly outbound for user acquisition, or what do you leverage for them?
So yes, we do get inbound. Traditionally, it was through partners, but we're getting much more inbound these days. But we still work with, large enterprises still have companies that have procurement contracts in place. So we try to leverage those organizations to streamline and facilitate the purchase of an Opta subscription. So we don't have to go through or invest, two or long or more months of trying to negotiate and wrangle a MSA.
All right. Sounds good, man. Makes sense. It makes sense. I remember those long negotiation days as well. Hello, this is Ryan here. Real quick, if you are enjoying this episode, please hit the subscribe button and leave a comment or review. If you want more help or just want to learn more about what the top SaaS CEOs and founders are doing, check out my website at www.ryanstaley.io. Join my newsletter, check out other free content resources I have there, and let me know if you want to scale your business. Now back to the episode. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about AI, because I know you're having some interesting use cases within your product and within your company and how you're using it internally. And I was literally just a guest on someone else's podcast, and he was talking about the internal use cases that he had for it. So would love to hear yours and understand like how you're using it internally, what departments, and like what are your favorite use cases that you're leveraging for?
Yeah, so initially as OpenAI came out of the gates, and after 2 months of them reaching 100 million users of that were playing, you were using it, we started seriously looking at how can we leverage AI in a much broader sense in our business to scale the resources, our people in our business. So we looked at customer services and sales. And from the customer service side, we adopted OpenAI and started training it using Viopta frequently asked questions, Viopta product information, and other Viopta related data. And we started using it internally. So our customer services teams, our sales engineers started using it. And once we got to a point where it was very accurate in the responses. And so it was our first AI assisted solution that really helped tremendously get things done. So that way our teams could start focusing on more valuable creative work. So customer services now, we continue to use it internally, but also we're making it available to our customers directly as well. So don't have to go to our website. In fact, I believe we've already probably turned off our FAQ webpage.
Okay, cool.
We may still have it out there, but the goal is not to even use it any longer. Or customers don't have to worry about documentation. As you probably can think, most people just don't like read it any longer. They just want to instantaneously get to an answer. So this has turned out to be very, very valuable.
Well, and then from it makes sense. Keep going, man.
So, and then we're going to be leveraging that same capability within our product suite in the cloud that our customers use in order to help them, you know, further accelerate time to value and improve that user experience with Viopta, as well as the technology assets that they've invested in. So they get the most out of those investments as well, especially around hybrid work specifically is what we're going after. And then on the sales front, we have started using AI to record meetings to create the documentation. As you can appreciate, most people aren't good note takers. But in reality, when you're in a meeting with someone, whether it's a one-on-one or a one and many, you want really the people to be focused on the topic and not worrying about taking notes, because you're going to miss. It doesn't matter how good you are a note taker, you're going to miss something. And so rather than having another person focus on taking notes, we now are much more efficient in leveraging at least it's a core capability for our sales team, I'd say today. So that way it helps us have one-on-ones with our teams. We get that information into Salesforce. It better supports the stage of where an opportunity's at. It supports us brainstorming on how to move a deal ahead based on the meeting notes that was generated. Now, it didn't have to be 100% accurate, but I think to date, we haven't had anyone necessarily complain about it was not accurate at all, or the content affected how they were, where they're at in the life cycle of an opportunity. So I think, and we're just scratching the surface on both functions today. We can do so much more, you know, lead scoring to, I believe just before we get on this, you were talking about even doing supporting other use cases around research. And some of our guys are already, or some of our team members are already starting to do that as well on their own without us actually requiring that.
That's good, man. I love that you're embracing that, because it's interesting. Most people are going for, which makes sense, the low hanging fruit, like the note taking or the 72% of activities are non-selling activities. You know, I'm of the belief, just from having a prop library, you could literally cut out or free up 10 hours per seller per week, at least, right? If you leverage it the right way. And if you do that, you can effectively double the time that they actually have to sell, right? While at the same time, if you leverage the strategic engine component, right? Because there's like a lot of really good strategic thinking and acumen acceleration I've seen, so that, you know, someone who, and this is what scared the hell out of me, I don't think I ever told you this, but this is right when ChatGPT came out. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to test this on something that I know to be true, right? Like, this is something that I know to be true based on like 10,000 hours of you know, C-level meetings. And it got like 90, 95% of the way there with like two questions, right? And so if you could tap into that, it becomes so rich and so powerful from that skill acceleration and acquisition perspective too. What do you think about that?
No, I mean, there's so many applications of using generative AI today. We're excited about how we can continue to scale our internal resources. I mean, the goal, I'd say, is if we don't have to hire someone to do the same level of work, let's leverage AI in that case. Or how do we make our people even better, stronger, and deliver way more value for our customers, whether it's on the sales side and helping to, you know, present demonstrate value that we could offer to on the customer service side, that truly deliver on that value in a much faster timeline than ever before, and without having to hire a ton of people. And so, as you can appreciate in technology today, it's really hard to find good people. So AI is, I think, is going to help in so many different ways. And so automating tasks is probably the low hanging fruit that we can pursue today. You know, yeah, from chatbot services to note taking, helping with research, feeding it data to help provide whether it's emails, it can generate for you to message, generating content that can be leveraged on the sales and marketing front as well.
Well, let me ask you about that. So how about as a CEO, like how do you leverage it and do you leverage it for strategic thinking or CEO use cases? Like what would you say to that?
So I do use it. In fact, I use a combination of ChatGPT and Gemini. So, we have migrated from Google Workspace to Microsoft 365 a couple of years ago. So we haven't really invested in the co-pilots, but I think leveraging some of the other tools. Now I do have a Google Workspace account that I'll leverage. So, I mean, Google has a ton of tools as well. And so just playing with that, provides ideas of how we can probably provides more ideas to share with the team to figure out, hey, where else can we start applying this technology to scale our workforce? And so I use it, from the simplistic standpoint. I do ask questions now. In fact, even for personal use, I'll ask Gemini questions about things. Versus just doing general search, it can do so much more. So I think this is definitely changing the world in a much better way. Now, granted, there's a lot of negative aspects there's a lot of negative potential outcomes if people don't use it correctly as well. Mm-hmm. I think just from a business standpoint, you have to start defining kind of, what's the values and the outcomes you want from this technology and focus on that.
Yeah, that's true. I think, do you use it for strategic thinking as well? Like in terms of making hard decisions or go-to-market strategies, anything along those lines?
I'd say it's still probably supporting technology and getting data to help on that. I would say it's I don't give it a question and wait for the response as the answer to move ahead with it. No, don't do that. So not yet today. I don't think we're at that point.
So, well, check this out, man, because I'd be curious on your take, because I haven't really talked about this on the show before. I've written on it on social, but as you know, Y Combinator is a well-respected incubator, right, when it comes to that. So I tried it out, and this was a while back, and I'm like, okay, what if I created a startup from scratch, right? And I'm like, I want you to act like you're Gary Tan, who's the CEO of Y Combinator, and I want you to identify the top seven, basically, types of SaaS startups there are, and identify the approach and the go-to-market model that they use. So then it listed out a bunch of them, right? And I'm like, all right, now give real-world examples of unicorns that have executed those business models, what they did, how long it took, all that, right? And then it did that too. And this was 9 months ago, right? So then the next thing, and this is where I thought it got really interesting, is I said, okay, assume that my strengths and my background as a founder are this, this, and this. I want you to identify now what would be the best type of startup and go-to-market model that supports my strengths, and assume that my DISC profile is this. And on the strengths finder, these are my top areas. And I go rate that for each one. And so basically it identified what would probably be a good startup for me to do. And then it also said, what's the ideal type of founder for the other ones as well, right? Which was pretty impressive from that perspective. And I know you're a little more advanced than that, right? Because you've done multiple startups, but that was something I thought was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, look, like I said, at the end of the day, it depends what kind of startup you're looking at starting up. if you're looking at starting a highly disruptive new business and model, the large language models or generative, it may not give you the answer because it doesn't know. Yeah, it hasn't had that data to feed into it. So you can get the how to, and I'll say the patterns of how to and what to do, Is that going to be the silver bullet for the next Google? I don't believe so. But you could still have maybe a successful startup. Yeah, I guess. Depends how you define success as well.
It's true, man. That's good perspective. Because, yeah, there's a lot of older data in some of those models that isn't totally factoring in, right? So speaking of that, like from your perspective, I know you're on the board at University of Texas and, you know, you're on the Forbes Technology Council. Like in light of everything that's happening right now, if you were to create a startup today, what would you focus on? What would that look like? And how would you approach it? Let's assume that you're building it around AI.
Well, I guess I've typically taken the approach of starting something that I have some background and experience in. But if I was coming out of college and I was one of the students going through trying to leverage some intellectual property from the University of Texas, this is just a personal interest of mine would be working in on space programs. And so going back to sci-fi books of the past, you know, 2001, you know, the Space Odyssey, I think I'd probably be there today working on some startup related to that. Not that I don't love what I'm doing right now. I think, you know, pursuing that opportunity to go establish new, I guess you could say, you know, going out and actually helping to populate Mars or other planets or moons out in space would be quite fascinating, or traveling through space would be incredibly exciting. I think the excitement behind exploration, you know, is something that, you know, just as a kid, even today, I mean, I'll just read about, I stay in tune with what SpaceX does and just quite amazed at what Elon Musk has done on that front.
Well, that's cool. I mean, that's cool. That's something that you nerd out on, right? And just be like totally amped on it. Let's shift gears a little bit and go into your company and how you're growing the business, because you've had a lot of success with that. So, you know, what would you say right now is the single biggest challenge to growing the company in terms of revenue, let's say? Not because most people are like, yeah, finding good people, right? Like that's the most standard answer that CEOs gave. But let's just focus on the revenue growth side. Like what would you say, if you had to pinpoint one single challenge that's the hardest right now in this type of environment, what would it be?
Since we've got a B2B SaaS technology platform, for us, we're targeting large enterprises. So it's how do we continue accelerating, getting to the right people to help a decision maker make the decision to buy Viopta, a subscription to Viopta? Because it's typically not just the decision maker. Yes, they make the decision, but they're relying on others to do the research and to help provide feedback and input onto the onto you making that investment decision. The other is security approvals these days, and so a lot of companies now they don't rely on that. They don't just hire people internally; they go contract it out, and so they use these goofy templates. We make the investments in all these information security certifications you would think would be good enough for them to, you know, read, you know, through the certification audit. There's more complexity that's being created out there. In some cases, there's a lot of the requirements that are being added don't make a lot of sense. So how can we, you know, streamline that sales process would help tremendously. Now, we have improved our selling motion, our sales lifecycle times from well over 6 months over the past couple of years. And last year, we proved we were able to get it within 4 to 6 months for new customers.
Nice.
Now, awesome. Now part of it is landing quickly with something that doesn't require a lot of time instead of going out for the large global enterprise-wide deal. Land with something and then start expanding from there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because when I led the enterprise team, that was one of the things that we figured out, you know, the hard way, was like there was such a thing as like a non-ideal customer, right? Like, and it wasn't that they were too small, they were too big. Because our margins got compressed so much, the competition was massively amplified, and the sales process was longer. So it was like less profitable. it was a longer sales cycle, and then there was like 15 more steps involved, plus an RFP. So you factor all those in, and you could work three times as many deals that were maybe 10%, 15% smaller, that would, you know, massively increase revenues. That was one of the things that that we saw, you know.
Yeah, it's critical to truly understand your ideal customer profile to make sure the team's focused on those organizations only, or those type of organizations.
Yeah, so true. So that's good. So what about on the flip side? Like, what do you see working really, really well right now in terms of, you know, like what's your single best strategy you've seen work really well in this type of environment today for growing the business, specifically with enterprise B2B companies?
Upsell, cross-sell of our products into our customer base. So expanding our footprint, I was just mentioning. So we've landed in most of, we've got a footprint in most of our organization, or most of our, we've got obviously a footprint in every one of our customers. So now there's an opportunity to continue increasing our wallet share in that environment around the area that we specialize in. That is the, that's our, I'd say one of our, part of our go-to-market strategy this year is to really amplify that, considering in the current global economic climate. We are still pursuing new customer business. So, you know, we're not stopping there, but there is a bigger focus around delivering more value within our customer base. And there's easily another $50 million that we can go after. Let's say we'll take that down, all of it, you know, this year, but there's a lot of opportunity in our customer base.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, especially if you got those enterprise customers. I mean, we added, we added like, cause it on that team, and I had a small team, we added like $35 million in cross-sell expansion revenue in like 2.5 years, you know? So it's like, there's a lot of meat on the bone typically, as long as you have the diversity of products, which sounds like you do, right? Being at the level that you're at. So that's pretty cool. Anything that you see working really well on accelerating NRR or, you know, new product acquisition with customers?
So around hybrid work, there's a great upsell opportunity with our Space Insights. So, which provides intelligence around how their meeting space is being used. And so as organizations are trying to figure out, you know, how much of that office space should they really keep, they can plug in Vopta immediately, get those data points, get some intelligence around, are they really being used or not? So rather than just relying, are the rooms being booked, are they really being used? And how are they being used? Are they using the technology? You know, is there only one person using, you know, meeting rooms that have a capacity for 5, 10, 20 people, and not optimal use. So they're blocking out teams from using it. So there's a lot of opportunity just on that. And then around user experience and user engagement, it doesn't matter where you work. You want to make sure that you and I and others have the best user experience, and that we're truly engaged in the meeting call sessions that are truly important for maximum engagement. You know, now granted, a town hall or a training session, yes, you need to be engaged, but you don't need to have your camera on. But in other, you know, meetings where you're trying to collaborate to solve a problem, come up with a new idea, you need the ability to see each other, you know, have an electronic whiteboard, because not everyone's in the same geography these days. So during COVID, a lot of people moved. Their companies may want them to come back into the office, but then they may not live in the same city any longer. So, and then anyway, it's a new world anyhow, where, you know, most companies want to hire the best people, and they're always going to be in the same location that they have offices. So,
true. Yeah. Well, I love that you guys have that capability, because like I would think that'd be like fishing with dynamite, because like there's so much underused. Even when offices were like in swing, there's so much underused space. So I think that would be like so valuable, especially with people trimming real estate, to be able to accelerate that. That's going to be huge.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to just unnecessarily cut 50% of your office space when you need 60% of it.
Right. It's true. Very true. Very true. So, well, Alfredo, unfortunately, we're up on time. Where can people find you? Where can they find out more about Viapta? And then we'll wrap things up.
Yeah. So Viapta, go to our website, VYOPTA.com. We have experts around hybrid, optimizing hybrid work that you can reach out to from our website or to schedule time to learn more about us as well. And if you want to reach me directly, it's alfredo.ramirez@viapta.com is my email address. And you can also look me up on LinkedIn. Happy to connect and communicate via LinkedIn as well, or X as well.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being on, Alfredo. This is a lot of fun.
All right. Same here. Thank you, Ron.
All right. And I will see you on the next episode. Thank you for checking out the Scale Up Show. My mission in life is to help founders and revenue leaders avoid all the pain and suffering in revenue growth so they can flip it and create a life of their own design. So if you enjoyed this show, please like, review, share it on social, and more importantly, just share it with a friend. Share it with someone that you think could learn and benefit from what you heard on today. But the more we get the message out, the more people we could help, the bigger the impact we make, and the bigger the community gets, which helps everybody. So once again, thank you for being a loyal listener. I appreciate you and look forward to seeing you on the next episode.